This is The Rundown. I'm Hari Srinivasan, and I am joined by two other Indian fellows. And before you think this is some sort of informal chat between Indian guys, this is the Chief Technology Officer and the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. government. I'm talking about Anish Chopra and Vivek Kundur. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
All right, so you're launching challenge.gov today, and kind of let's use this as an opportunity to talk about the bigger picture of how government is trying to democratize and trying to include people into the process.
Well, we basically had described today five key platforms that the two of us are working on, a couple that I'm working on, a couple he's working on. For example, this president has felt that to close the technology gap for economic prosperity, we need to have an advanced IT infrastructure in the country, and he laid out a bold plan for spectrum to nearly double the amount of commercially available spectrum for mobile broadband. That's one of the pillars that we've been working on. We've been working on pillars around voluntary consensus-driven standards to drive the industry towards more interoperability. And we've been working very closely in research and development investments in IT that will help us continue to be on the cutting edge, particularly in cloud computing. Vivek will say about a couple other platforms, and then we'll talk about how it relates.
Sure. I mean, part of what we're trying to do is essentially close the technology gap between how the American people access services and information online when it comes to their everyday lives versus how they have to interact with their government. So think about on a daily basis, whether you're booking a flight, your favorite restaurant, or a hotel reservation, it's done online, it happens in a matter of minutes, yet when you're dealing with your government, you have to stand in line, you've got to turn in a paper form, or you've got to essentially hold on the phone. So the government, unfortunately, spends over $80 billion annually on information technology. So what we're trying to do is introduce game-changing technologies that will help improve the way the American people interact with their government. We're trying to leverage cloud computing in the same way that you or I can go online and sign up for an email account or run a small business using online cloud-based accounting systems or go online and actually launch websites. Why does a government have to build and own everything? So what we're trying to do is figure out how do we leverage cloud computing, and secondly, we're trying to democratize data to make sure that we're shifting power away from just government bureaucrats, but moving that information and that data to the American people, so not only can they be watchdogs to hold their government accountable, but also innovate by creating some of the most innovative applications and solutions to serve the broader populace.
But Hari, the reason we're here today is these five key elements of how we're going to close the technology gap. It's insufficient for us to develop the kind of raw material that allows that to happen. We need to engage the American people in a more coordinated and organized fashion so that they can innovate using all of the tools that we're describing. That's why today Vivek and I jointly announced the launch of challenge.gov, a common front, simple storefront that would allow any person in this country, whether you're an entrepreneur or someone who just wants to engage on a one-off basis, to find new and creative ways where you can participate in a frictionless way to advance the benefits of your own areas of interest. So you care about nutrition, there's a nutrition challenge. You care about energy, there's an energy challenge, an education challenge. So platforms plus this notion of a challenge environment engaging the American people, we believe translates into results through public-private ecosystems, that which we think is going to move this country forward.
So, Vivek, your office is in the Office of Management and Budget. And how much money does the government already save by becoming more efficient? Or let's say, since the kind of overhaul that you've already done, what are some cost savings that you can say, here's how much we're already saving and how much more we stand to save?
Well, look, we spend on information technology, as I said, about $80 billion annually. One of the first things we did is we decided to shine light on the performance of IT projects across the federal government. For decades, we were throwing good money after bad money. For example, the Department of Defense spent 12 years and about $1 billion on an integrated human resource system that failed. The Veterans Administration in 1998 launched a financial management system, spent $250 million, it failed in 2004, relaunched it in 2005, and it failed again 2 months ago. So what we've done is we've taken a very tough stance against wasteful spending in the federal government. We've terminated dozens of projects across the federal government worth hundreds of millions of dollars that are not producing dividends or results that people expect. What we're also doing is we're saying that, you know what, we need to end this culture of duplicative spending. For example, just think about data centers alone. In 1998, the federal government had 432 data centers. Last year, that number was over 1,100. Agencies are spending money left and right on infrastructure that's duplicative and wasteful. So what we're doing as part of the 2012 budget process is we've issued a zero growth policy on infrastructure, and we're forcing agencies to consolidate so we could save hundreds of millions of dollars, which will equal to billions of dollars in the coming years.
And so also, I know you're in the Office of Science and Technology, right?
Yes.
So how do we, this is maybe a 10,000 foot question, but how do we retrain the federal workforce, or even just in general, the larger workforce, about not just being more computer savvy, but when he's talking about some of these redundancies, catching up with Web 2.0, catching up with cloud computing, so it's not necessarily even kind of rethinking how they perform in government?
Well, this president in November of last year called for an unprecedented public-private partnership called Educate to Innovate, focused on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Our office in the Office of Science and Technology Policy was one of the key elements of this program. We've galvanized over $500 million of private sector and nonprofit capital to go at the grassroots level, neighborhood by neighborhood, to focus on how do we build more science, technology, engineering, and mathematics trained professionals as a long-term strategy for getting this right. But beyond that, oftentimes it's actually saying, what should the government not do that can be done better by these ecosystems? So earlier today, the CTO of Health and Human Services announced a much more expansive view of the Community Health Data Initiative, the notion that the government's role, the HR, if you will, of the government, is to find data and to release it under the premise of data.gov that Vivek stood up, but then to establish these local and grassroots ecosystems so that we don't know who in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is organizing a local team to tackle a particular problem, maybe it's in diabetes, powered by this data in new and creative ways. So what we're celebrating is this new thinking that the government should retool and train where it needs to spend its time and energy doing something, but should encourage the private sector and the entrepreneurial ecosystem to pick up the ball and to grab it and drive more innovation. We're in the middle of an Apps for Healthy Kids competition that the First Lady announced that's part of this challenge.gov concept. What we're trying to figure out is what are the games or the applications that would help kids learn about nutritional behavior. Now, over 100 applications were developed for the contest. That the market value might be roughly $2 million based on what the assessments came in. But we only put a $60,000 prize, and we invited the public and outsiders to judge these. When we announce the winners at the end of the month, you're going to see a whole creative ecosystem that if we had to build those as government applications, we would have been embarrassingly lame and no one would have used them. But now I think this will actually be deployed in a manner that has some kids and parents actually be better off today because they have access to information they didn't have that was not available yesterday.
Vivek, that kind of segues into a question. When you're investing in infrastructure, when you're kind of building the systems, how do you make sure that you can try to eliminate some of those redundancies at a state and local level? Because there's so many small municipalities and state governments that are tackling these same things with their health and human services departments or equivalents, their own treasury departments, so to speak. So how do you say, okay, this is going to be an open standard or an open API? Let's go ahead and you can use this if you want to, or you can choose to go another route.
Well, if I can build off of what Anish just said, part of what's happening across the world, right, if we look at the genius of Apple and the App Store or YouTube or even Facebook, what's happening is there are these lightweight platforms, but true value is created by third parties. The App Store, for example, Apple didn't go out there and create all the apps. Third parties did. Same thing with YouTube. It was people like you and I who are putting videos online, or whether you're looking at Facebook, the content was created by third parties. In the same way, as we look at states and local governments, part of what we're doing is we're looking at the investments we're making, massive investments when it comes to whether it's Medicare, Medicaid systems, unemployment systems. Why do we need 50 of each? Why do we need 50 Medicare, Medicaid systems or unemployment systems? And what we're doing is we're bringing together states and we're saying, is there a third way? Could we approach this problem in a lightweight, federated manner? So for example, at the local level, I was with Mayor Gavin Newsom and we launched the Open 311 API platform. And what that essentially did is it said, you know what? Not every city has got to go out there and reinvent how the public participates or leverages technology, but instead you create these lightweight open standards. And whether you're in San Francisco or Boston or Washington or Chicago, developers across the country can help create and provide solutions. At the federal level, for example, the Consumer Protection Safety Commission released data. And what happened, what was really interesting here, is that a developer that nobody knew went out there and said, you know what, I'm going to create an app for the iPhone that will allow expecting mothers or mothers with young children to go out and look at all the products that have been recalled. So you could see if a crib has been recalled before you make a buy decision. Sure. Then what the government did is, what we said is, you know what, let's invest modest sums of money to make sure that we could use the iPhone camera so that when you scan a product, you could see whether it's recalled or not. So what you're seeing is this feedback loop of innovation between the government and its people. And as we look at this broader budget issue around tech spend, part of what we've got to realize is we can't continue to approach these problems in a Web 2.0 world with an industrial era mentality around buying technology.
All right, and finally, I don't know which one of you gets this question, but President Obama is on a BlackBerry very often. Now, is that is that a matter of public record 10 years from now, 25 years from now, the messages that a president sends?
That's a great question. We don't actually, it's a funny thing. Following the previous administration, the CIO for the White House is actually an independent organization. Doesn't
it's
report to either of us.
It's part of presidential records, so yes.
And it's part of presidential records. So all of the communications that are happening, whether it be the Facebook account of the president or the Twitter account, those are being managed by this independent CIO and will be fully compliant with the Presidential Records Act. But not in our responsibility domain.
Yeah, nice way to deflect that. Right. Vivek Anish,
thank
thanks so much for your time.
Much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for doing this.
All right, this is The Rundown. I'm Hari Srinivasan of the Gov 2.0 conference. Thank you for joining us.